You're listening to the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb. I'm Natasha Steele, and the show's broadcasting monthly from the open market in the heart of the city. Over the next hour, we'll be sharing news and events from Brighton & Hove's business community. Today's theme is growing your business, and we've got the owners of some very different companies to tell us their stories. In Going Up, entrepreneurs from two Brighton businesses pitch for what they need to move up to the next level. And Reverb's own Cathy Caton is here to talk about the phenomenal success of her very spirited venture, Brighton Gin. You're listening to the Brighton Business Show on FM 97.2, on digital, online at radioreverb.com, and on podcast, downloadable from Mixcloud and Audio Boom. First up, we've got the business news from around Brighton and Sussex. Businesses are signing up fast to the Refill Brighton scheme. Over 60 cafes, restaurants and shops, and even a theatre have pledged to refill water bottles with tap water on request. The idea is to reduce the number of single-use bottles discarded in the city. If you're worried about plastic pollution and want to see less litter on the streets, why not get involved? Download the free Refill app from iTunes or your app store and put your business on the Refill map. You can go to the app and click on the map and your business will be part of the scheme. Using the same app, you can find your nearest refill station and collect rewards as you go. Next month, we'll be speaking to the team behind Refill Brighton and some of the businesses involved. Good news for anyone looking for premises. A new co-working space has opened up in Hove. The serviced offices are called Freedom Works and are very conveniently located at Hove Business Centre near the train station. A mix of workspaces on offer, including both permanent and hot desks. Freedom Works founder is John Trigg. He said, "One of our aims is to keep homegrown talent at home by having the space next to the station." Brighton and Hove Chamber of Commerce is hosting a workshop on growing your creative business. Coach and mentor Rob DaCosta's workshop will provide plenty of useful advice, helping you develop your own plan. Jenny Mustill, creator and owner of Ruby Ruth Dolls, will be sharing her own experience of taking her handcrafted gifts from market stall to global market. And Jenny's also joining us on the business show in the next hour to share her experiences. The Growing Your Creative Business Workshop takes place on November 17th. To sign up, visit businessinbrighton.org.uk. Have you got some news to share? Has your business won a contract or an award, secured funding or launched a new product? If so, we'd love to hear from you. Tweet or Facebook at Business Reverb or email natasha.steele@icloud.com to get in touch with the show.
The Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb.
Reverb is always looking to improve service as a radio station. You can help us make Radio Reverb even better by filling in our online survey. Just head over to the website radioreverb.com or visit our Facebook or Twitter pages. Completing the survey will only take a few minutes, but could make all the difference to Reverb's funding and success. Now, it's been called Mother's Milk, Mother's Ruin and Liquid Madness, sold at 10 pence the quartum. What am I talking about? Gin, of course. I'm delighted to welcome to the studio someone who's all too familiar with the Reverb studio and with gin. Cathy Caton has presented Out in Brighton, the city's only dedicated LGBTQ show for... how many years, Cathy?
Many, many. I think 7 or 8 now. It seems to have snuck up.
And more recently, she's co-founded Brighton Gin, a business which is already getting national and even international recognition. Cathy, welcome to the business show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a delight to be here.
I'm thrilled you were able to find the time, and congratulations on beating off competition from all over the country to win multiple awards, including the People's Choice Gin 2017 and the Gold in the International Wine and Spirits Competition. How does it feel
I'm
to
blushing.
Be globally recognised?
actually properly blushing and sweating slightly at the thought. Actually, do you know, the thing with the... I think that the People's Drink Awards has been amazing for us, not least because it's been chosen by a panel of people from across the country. Mm-hmm. So drink specialists, but also people who've just been, who like gin and like booze.
And who doesn't?
And exactly, only the sensible believe in it. And so for them to kind of pick us out of hundreds and hundreds of gins has been absolutely amazing. Really fabulous.
Fantastic. So what made you want to be a distiller? Well, and how did you get started?
I should probably find a better origin story, I think I would call it, if I were a comic book hero. But quite some time ago, actually about seven years ago, mm-hmm. lots of stuff happening,
yeah.
I'd had a very late night dancing around someone's kitchen table on the gins, Plymouth gin to be exact, and was going out for a run down the seafront the next day.
Wow.
Albeit very slowly, but as I was running, I was thinking, if I'd been drinking anything else other than gin, I wouldn't be off my sofa, let alone out the flat and going for a run.
Mm-hmm.
And thought, gin's the thing that lets you, as much as possible, get away with it. Brighton is a place that needs to get away with it on a frequent basis, and that's it. Brighton needs its own gin.
Wow, that's really interesting. A glass of gin and a run can always sort you out. And what have been the challenges you've faced along the way from the very start?
Oh, so many things. So many things that actually, if I had known the realities of, mm-hmm. of all of the challenges, probably wouldn't have got started at all, actually. It would have stayed in the, nice idea box that I'm definitely just not going to do. There are quite a few things in that box, including riding a pedalo across the Atlantic, but that's never going to happen.
Oh, come on again and tell us about that, please.
but... It's, yeah, I mean, so much stuff from learning how mm. to do it, how to
so
distill.
So you've no background, technical background?
No technical background. I've got, been a passionate consumer and had lots of interest in kind of local food and booze for years and years, mm-hmm. but very much as a consumer, I ran pubs in the 90s in Camden, but again, that's kind of a very different mm-hmm. end of the scale.
Absolutely.
And yeah, a lot of it has involved me kicking myself for not paying more attention to my chemistry lessons. I've scraped a C in chemistry. It's like, oh no, if I'd paid attention, I probably could have saved myself months.
A C
and months.
Is impressive in my book.
It's, and I'd like to say that was at the time when they were hard to get.
Controversial.
She said, yeah, it's, no, I was terrible at it. So I've had to kind of learn all sorts of things, which sure. has been brilliant, but full of challenge. And paperwork and HMRC and just all of
what
that business
stuff. And things? Oh, have you had to grow very rapidly?
Well, what we're trying to do is do exactly that. What we'd love to do is to really see where we can go with Brighton Gin and absolutely just go for it, all guns blazing. But we also want to keep doing it in an authentic, truly Brighton way. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we're a handmade gin from beginning to end, down to it's all hand-labelled and hand-waxed.
Wow.
Currently done by my mum, actually,
oh,
which is fantastic.
Her.
But so she's having moved down to Sussex last year to, come be closer to me and my sister. She's now basically doing a really hard physical job 5 days.
Family business,
yeah.
Then.
But so we want to grow and scale, but we want to keep this being handmade. We use organic wheat as our base spirit. It's mm-hmm. very expensive. You can taste it in the result.
Yes.
And the lack of hangover from using really pure but expensive ingredients. Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of challenge of kind of juggling what we want to do with the realities of doing it. And growing the team actually is one of the key bits of that, because kind of asking people to, and kind of particularly on the production side, we want people to have an absolute pride and perfectionism in it, but actually it's a really hard manual job, which we all do, we all lump in on it, but it's kind of a weird ask. So you're asking people
so
to
everybody's
really
pulling together as a team on all aspects, on the production, on the marketing, on the promotion. Everybody works together
absolutely. And we've been incredibly fortunate. We've had through Sussex University two interns have been with us over the summer for 3 months, and we've been blessed with them. They've been absolutely amazing. We've been so lucky with them. It's also been a real shock to us all about actually what it's like to see the world through a 20-something's eyes, because we are old to them, really old. It's been a big shock.
Bringing youth into a business these days can bring all sorts of new ideas, because the tech world especially has changed, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And they're just so, that their attitude's just amazing, because even They don't know, and there's so much stuff we're doing that none of us have any idea about, but they've just got this great attitude of going, oh, I don't know, but I'll give it a go. It's brilliant. Really, it's fantastic. So we've been blessed to have them, and I'm delighted that they're going to stay on part-time while they do their last year at university. So they've been a real boon.
Great stuff.
But it's really hard, and tiny business, it means that, you know, who you're going to bring in, it's a big thing.
A big thing and a big commitment. Now, it's been a bit of a challenge to pick a tune for someone with as much radio experience as you, Cathy. But I found a cracking piece for bopping around the distillery. It's called Gin Tonic. So here goes. You're listening to The Brighton Business Show, serving Brighton & Hove's business community with me, Natasha Steele, and I'm talking to Cathy Caton, co-founder of Brighton Gin. That was an electro swing track called Gin Tonic by Parov Stella. Cathy, I need to tell our listeners, though I'm sure they're aware, that other gins are available.
There are indeed, and a considerable number of other gins. You've got 500 British gins and more than 3,000 now worldwide. So whatever your taste, whatever you're into, you can find a gin for that.
And there are gin clubs and gin festivals. What is it about all these gins? Why is gin so in?
Oh, crikey, there are so many things. And I'm absolutely delighted that it's having its moment in the sun again. And certainly 7 years ago when came up with the idea for Brighton Gin, thought that there was going to be a gin genaissance, but I never realised that it was going to be as massive as it is now. You can get gin and tonic flavoured everything, tea bags, but I just say, yeah, have a separate cup of tea and then have a gin and tonic.
And what's your favourite kind of gin cocktail?
Oh, so I cannot make a cocktail to save my life, although I like very simple things. So something I'd make at home is gin Ricky. So that's a gin, the juice of half a lime, the shell of a lime, and then top it up with soda water. It's really refreshing. Mm. It was F. Scott Fitzgerald's favourite drink.
Well, there's a reason to have it.
Probably because you could get away with drinking it at lunchtime and no one realised, because you just smell nice and limey and fresh. So I'd imagine it's that. But I think there's all sorts of things kind of fueling the gin boom. One is that what's happening with gins, kind of following what's happened with craft ale and the craft brewers, they've really got people interested in trying lots of different things. So
maybe it's a kickback against the big chains in the pubs and the breweries. Do you think that's what's going on across the piece?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a real rise in, which I think is fantastically positive, in localism and provenance. People want to know where their food and drink has come from. Mm. And I think, you know, every time we have, it's where I get my serious hat on, but every time we have something like the horse meat scandal, and people go, oh, but actually maybe that's why my frozen lasagna is 39p. Actually, let's ask questions about where our food and drink comes from. And one of the few things that we have genuine power and control over is where we spend our money and where it can go. And if we can support local producers, then absolutely brilliant. And I think that's, you know, gin's doing one of those things. It's also just fun and fabulous and non-gendered as spirits go. Spirits tend to have,
interesting,
particularly whiskey, has a reputation of being as older and white and male and quite exclusive and excluding. And it's not actually, but it has that, but it has that reputation. Whereas gin, people just know tons about it.
Well, I mean, it started off as Mother's Ruin, so it was very gendered early on, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's changed, of course. It's more sophisticated these days.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we still have hangovers legally back to the 1700s when the Gin Acts were coming in Parliament, where it was the crack cocaine of its day. Mm. There were questions in Parliament about the ruin of society. I think it was one in four households in London had a still making their own gin, and juniper was rare, so turps and all sorts of stuff went into it. The stuff that makes you, you know, lose your marbles potentially and ruin your eyesight and stuff like that. So, yes, but there's still this legislation that affects modern day distillers and producers now that goes back to then.
Yeah, really.
Oh, I've turned into a proper gin girl.
I love the history. This is fantastic, that. But you've chosen Brighton as the brand name. I mean, you've told us the origins are obviously in this city that you live in. But what is so good about, why does the name Brighton travel nationally, globally? I think it works, doesn't it?
Well, I hope it does, and we're going to find out, I think. So ask me to come back in a year and I'll tell you how it's going. But I think there are one of the reasons that I'm so obsessed with Brighton and love it so much is that I think there are 1,000 different Brightons. It can be 1,000 different things to different people. And I think whatever you're into, you can find it here, whether it's hot yoga and clean living or gigs or, you know, this emerging food and drink scene. Obviously, there's massive LGBTQ community here as well.
Yeah.
There are just, it's just a cracking place. And it's a place that a lot of people, including myself, associate with coming to and going, oh, wow, OK, actually, here's somewhere where I feel like I can actually belong. And fit in.
And have a good time.
And have a good time, exactly.
And what next for Brighton, Gin? If I follow your Facebook page and you are popping up all over the globe at the moment with a bottle of gin in hand. What's next?
We're giving it a go, but it's too tough to say to my voice. It does come with a penalty. So one thing that's going to be really exciting for us is that we are in the next few weeks launching a new size. We're going for a half size bottle, so it looks the same as the full size bottles but is 350 mils. They're super cute. My poor mum is busy filling and waxing labeling those at the moment, and I'm going to say the C word, so they're going to be out and about in time for Christmas.
Super.
Stocking
fillers.
That's a really big and exciting and complicated logistic thing for us. Mm-hmm. And then the main thing is it's hell for leather until the end of the year, really. And then in 2018, really hope that we'll be looking at further exports and getting out and about and just seeing where we can take Brighton Gin too.
And where can people buy it? Where can they try it? How can they get a hands on a bottle or a glass?
Okay, so if you're based in Brighton, and if you don't want to commit to buying a whole bottle, we're available in 250 pubs and restaurants around town. If you want to try it and then buy it, you can go to places like 10 Green Bottles, which is just opposite the library, and you can have a try of it and try its gin and tonic and then whisk it away from there. You can find us online at Masters of Malt and places like that will deliver to you wherever you are around the world. Or just go to brightongin.com and find details of all the suppliers and our new exciting interactive map that shows you where you can drink and buy it.
You've got a map?
Yeah, I've said that with confidence. It's like, I wonder if it's working yet. Soon it'll be working. We'll soon have an interactive, exciting map that will show you where you can buy and drink around the country.
Wow, I love the work where tech meets gin.
Yes, we'll see how that goes. We're giving it a go. Like all these things, in a very Brighton way, we'll try it and see what happens.
That's great. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, Cathy. What an inspirational story. Thank you very much, Cathy Caton from Brighton Gin.
Thank you so much for having me.
Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb.
And the way has very much been up for my next guests. Welcome to the Reverb Studio. Jenny Mustell from Ruby Ruth Dolls.
Hi.
Peter Ramsey from Movem. And business strategist Sam Howell.
Hi.
Hi, I'm delighted you could all come into the Reverb Studio. And let's waste no time. You've got some cracking experiences to share. Jenny, you run a very successful crafting company, but it started out on a London market stall. Can you tell us what's special about Ruby Ruth Dolls and how you got started?
Ruby Ruth Dolls are a collection of weird, sort of eccentric characters that are, although toy-like, they're actually bought by adults and used as like ornamental interior products that have a nostalgia to sort of 1970s, 80s sort of kids' programmes. And, started out on a market stall after doing a fine art degree in 2004. And it was after a friend suggested making dolls that started selling them on the market stall, and they were really popular. Lots of people started to buy them, and it went from there, really, and started selling them at music festivals like Secret Garden and Green Man. And it wasn't until 2009 that I decided to start selling them as a business and focus on it full time.
Brilliant. And Peter, you've been nominated for the Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award at the Amazon Growing Business Awards. Mm. What does Movem do and what sparked the idea?
Yeah, so Movem is similar, I guess, in concept to Airbnb, but for residential tenancies, so regular people just renting homes. And yeah, I got started in university, so I dropped out of uni to do it when I had to rent for the first time, and I realised how crazy this whole process is. And so yeah, since then it kind of started up just in one university, and then we grew really organically. Mm-hmm. And we're 4.5 years down the line now, yeah, being used kind of all over the UK.
So a really valuable service for anybody in rent, you know, such a big sector now as well, rented accommodation, and full of controversies in terms of the quality. So that's something you can help people manage in your business.
I hope so.
So Jenny, can you tell us a bit more about how Ruby Ruth Dolls has grown and maybe the journey you've taken from those early days and some of the challenges you've faced?
Well, the transition from market stall to selling wholesale has been a bumpy one, but well worth it now, because they're now stocked in 20 shops around the country and one in Switzerland, also all internationally through the website as well.
Wow. So what sort of challenges did that involve in going wholesale? What were the particular challenges in...
Initially, just going round to shops and sort of having dolls in my bag and being like showing them, being like, are you interested in these? And sort of that.
So it was that basic, that you were having to go door to door to
started
sort of
persuade
people?
Yeah. And then getting sort of sale or return relationship going. But then from there, starting to do trade fairs, which pay off much better because the buyers come to you. But that's just a big financial risk as well. Mm-hmm. So... a big learning curve.
And were there financial challenges along the way where you know cash flow could sometimes be a problem in a growing business? Was that ever something you've faced?
Oh god, yeah, definitely. It's still massively, like, that's one of the biggest struggles is making sure things are paid on time, and that can really put a spanner in the works for things.
Yeah, something I'm sure a lot of small businesses tend to face, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what about in terms of staffing? I think a business like yours is probably the certain times of year when you need more help producing the dolls, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. So this can be really seasonal. So in the run-up to Christmas especially, need to take on more staff. And that was a real sort of stepping stone to things getting bigger, was taking on staff and training people up. But I think it was just really hard of letting go of control of that. Mm. But it was really necessary and worthwhile now.
And what stage are you at now with staffing? How many people work with you? At
the moment we've got two, and in the lead up to Christmas, usually, like, historically I've taken on a couple, like, more full-timers, maybe one or two to
on a temporary basis.
Yeah.
So you need a sort of some flexibility in the way that you get your labour.
Definitely.
Yeah. Brilliant. And Peter, what about you? How many people are involved in Movem now? Mm. And
At the moment, full-time, there's five of us. There's two other directors. There's probably about 10 of us in total, including, like, part-timers. Yeah.
And what other challenges did you face in that period of going from you having this idea and starting it yourself and having a business that employs 10 people? Mm.
Probably most of them, in some form or another. So fundraising, we've fundraised.
Where did you go to find your investment?
Yeah, so a mixture. We've done crowdfunding, which is difficult, and a new kind of way of that. We've funded, like, privately through just, like, funds and investors. We've had an office of people that we've run out of funding and then had to lose, for lack of a better term, and then start again and do that. So there's a whole load of small parts of that, like, were particularly challenging. Technically, we've had lots of problems just technically expanding. So
yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Can you explain some of that?
So I built the first site because I've made websites for a while, but I made it just for Bournemouth, which was the university I was in, and then as it kind of started getting requested for other cities, and then so I had to technically rebuild the platform every time. And this is funny enough where Sam kind of got involved. really early on was that scaling. Mm-hmm. And so now we have a full in-house development team who are far better than I was. So technically we had to go through the small period of not being scalable to like get to where we are now. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty big, and that took a long time.
Oh, that's really, really interesting stuff. Sam, I think we'll bring you in here. You, as Peter mentioned, you did give some support to Move'em, or you have given some probably ongoing over the years. But in general terms, the experiences we're hearing here aren't unusual, are they?
No, not at all. I think people get into this mentality that when their back's against the wall and they've got pressures coming from all directions with staff and money and supply and demand and everything that's, you know, sort of weighs them on a day-to-day basis, I think people assume that they're the only ones going through it and that everyone else sort of has an easy ride. There's a lot in the social media perpetuating these incredible success stories, which I would like to remind people are in a really, really low percentage. It's like, you know, in the 80s wanting to be a rock star, you know, yeah, it does happen to people, and some people do go from an idea to a multimillionaire overnight, but it's not for everyone. Most people go through years of struggle and turmoil and, you know, having to giving up going on holiday, yeah, and going to people's weddings and being able to spend time with friends and family and all the rest of it to make this.
I mean, some people put their house on the line and all sorts of things.
Of course. I mean, obviously, for a lot of young budding entrepreneurs, they don't have a house to put on, yeah, the line. So, I think that anybody who thinks they're out there and they're going through this, this sort of trying to get a business off the ground and doing it on their own and going through this struggle and it just can't believe that anybody else would be going through so much stress as them needs to remember that actually they're not on their own. Thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people are going through it every day, and you know, the best thing you can do is go to people around you, find somebody that you trust, whose opinion you trust, and say to them, look, this is what I'm dealing with, point me in the right direction. I'm too close to the coal face at the moment to be able to see clearly. Just give me a bit of advice. You know, what do you think I should do next? It might change your perspective.
Yeah, that's just the general, yeah, experience of everybody, isn't there?
Even now, like Sam and I met an hour before this was before now, and even we were even talking about that. There was a couple of things that I was asking for advice on, and we did actually use the example of people such as like Elon Musk, who are like, you know, the top percentile who have done certain things. I think it's a problem for everyone, probably all the time.
Yeah, do you think that's the biggest problem, just being able to get a perspective on what you're doing?
We all suffer from it. I mean, the most common things in our lives that we will go to people and ask advice on is relationships and friendships and general day-to-day jobs, and say, oh no, I've had a problem with my boss, who's, you know, because we've all been employed, you know, so we had a problem with this, or, you know, my girlfriend's giving me grief about that, whatever it is. And actually you speak to friends because you want their perspective, and if somebody turns around and says, I think you're being really unreasonable, then you take a look back on discussions, arguments you've had, and gone, maybe it is me. Well, when you're running a business, it's exactly the same thing. The problem is when you're the business owner and you're at the top, there's a famous phrase, it's lonely at the top. Well, that's because there is no one bearing down on you and pushing you out of your comfort zone or putting pressure on you to develop, evolve. And that's why a lot of directors, after a period of time, get very much stuck in their ways and start dropping the ball and missing opportunities.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's good to have somebody who can be quite ruthless and brutal with you and tell you, actually, no, you need to be better, you need to try other things, you need to, you know, develop in the same way that you're constantly convincing yourself.
So it's great advice that people need to open up, basically, to get the best advice.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is that with the change through the digital era, over the last 20 years, you know, people are communicating better, certainly young people as well, and because of that, people are much happier to talk and, you know, be open about what's troubling them, etc., etc., and therefore we have more young entrepreneurs than ever, and I think communication is part of that. I think people see social media as a bad thing because people aren't building face-to-face relationships and interpersonal skills as well, which is an issue, but they are talking more, and that's good, especially if they're realising their weaknesses more.
Sure, and we heard some examples from Jenny and Peter about the investment side, about staffing side, about technical issues. What would there be three key areas you would say pop up again and again with growing businesses?
At least three. I would say that the biggest issues that people kind of face when they're starting a business normally surround the product. So it's the product, the market or the target demographic, and then the route to it. Mm-hmm. So people go, I'm going to build this at home in my garage, and then I'm going to put it on the internet, and people are going to just buy it from me. I'm going to make a load of money. And actually, they realize that maybe the internet's not the right way to get to them. You know, Jenny said going about to trade stalls and actually having the buyers coming to them.
I thought the festival was a really good approach.
Yeah. It's really a good environment for people to buy things, almost drinking all day.
Lubricate their wallets.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's a great... Yeah. Well done. Yeah.
But I think one of the other problems is that my degree was in product design, and I had a lecturer, a wonderful guy, when I was at university, and he said to me, Sam, when you're designing something, try not to design something for which you're part of the target market. Because if you do, you'll make assumptions based on, well, this is what everyone wants because this is what I want. Mm-hmm. But actually, if you're building something for a market that you're not part of, say you were building something for people in the forces, for instance, you know, a rucksack or something, and you've never been in the forces, then you will purely design your product based on market research, which means you'll give the market what they want as opposed to what you think they want. Mm-hmm. So I would say that if you are going to start a business and you've come up with an idea, make sure that you have done enough research to know that there is actually a desire for your product or your service, mm-hmm. because people spend a lot of time building and trying to sell things that actually no one wants, and they refuse to believe that actually it's just no interest to the market.
Have you had that experience? Have you had to research your market in any way, or did you just sort of fall into it, Jen?
Well, I've done a lot of sort of I found polls on social media a really useful way of sort of getting people involved and working out what, you know, different characters I don't know, it's different to what you were saying there, because I think like my product is something that is very much has evolved from things that I like. So, and it's really personal as well. So I don't know, it's completely different, but not necessarily there's a right
advice,
and wrong.
It doesn't work for everyone. It's generic advice.
Yeah. I don't know, there's right and wrong for pros and cons for everything, isn't there? But another good way I've sort of for market research, it's just general social media in general, really, just putting things out and finding out what's popular. And market stalls were great as well, because worked out what people are willing to pay for things. And price point there, so they are like art dolls, but trying to sell them in that sort of arena and in shops.
I think, you still want to get sales.
I absolutely right. In your case, is an emotional product. It's about what you want to create and whether or not people buy into that. But I think there will also be as a certain amount of reactive redesign or restyling about it, because if you create 30 dolls and your least favorite one is the one that sells the most, then you just kind of have to appreciate that the market has got a different taste to you.
Yeah, I've got to tailor it to that.
Exactly. And that's the proof in it.
It's like musicians who hate the one song that gets popular.
Yeah, that must be very infuriating as a creative.
And we heard Sam about the staffing. Finding the right people can be very difficult. What advice would you give to anybody that's taking on staff for the first time or having to expand their team?
I would just say, when you're choosing your staff, take your time. Don't just pick somebody because they go, I'll work for you for this amount of money. You know, how much you're paying them shouldn't be a focus. It should be, do they want to work with you? Do they communicate well? Have they taught you about the journey they want to go on and the milestones? We all have our own milestones in life. And if you're going to hire a member of staff, they want to grow like your business does. So where do you want to take them in 2 years' time, let alone your product and service and your own life?
Really interesting points. Jenny, looking back at the way your business has grown, is there anything you wish you'd known when you started out?
I think pricing your work properly, and because I was so like passionate about like wanting to just get my work out there and to scale it up and everything, that I possibly have been underselling it for underpricing it for a long time. And I think just factoring everything into it, like your time and everything, so that so you're just not underselling yourself and you can make a proper living off it and take time off as well, because I think once you just become like a slave to what you're doing, it really takes away from it, and you need to get a good balance.
Excellent advice. And Peter, what about you? What have you taken, what would you have done in hindsight maybe differently?
There's loads. Massively. You know what? Probably every month, I think. Oh, I wish I'd known that. I think it's reading good. More. Reading more books. That's, like, changed how
on,
I approach
on business
things.
Strategy or on...
I actively avoid business strategy books. I find them pretty awful. You know,
like consultants.
a lot. Yeah, just reading more and just bits of psychology and whatever you're interested in. I think just reading more in general is good.
Thank you. And I know I just wanted to capture any sort of big lucky breaks you had in your business. I think you've got a nice story, Jenny, about a bit of publicity you got that was unexpected.
Yeah, 2014, Zoella, the blogger who lives in Brighton, blogger, bought two of the characters from my Brighton stockist at Pussy Home Boutique. She bought Rita and Malcolm, and they just started popping up on her social media, and she's got like 11 million people following her on different wow. social platforms. And then she had them in her ITV advert, and then now they're permanently alongside her wax work. So that was,
Madame Tussauds.
Yeah. So that was pretty incredible to get that sort of exposure.
Absolutely. How about you? Obviously this award is a great
Lucky feels like it takes some of the work out, but we've definitely had breaks where, like, you know, crowdfunding's a big break, that moment at the end of that, but...
Can you say how much you raised through crowdfunding?
Yeah, well, through the crowdfunding of 200,000.
Wow. That's incredible.
Thank you. But, like, it was stressful, and...
Why was it stressful, can you
just... Oh, God, just... you know, it's like constantly applying for a job that you put everything into and getting told no. Like, after 10 jobs, people be like, oh, this is a waste of my time, but... You know, you might get turned down by 20 people in a row, 30 people in a row, and it's just constantly being able to, like, have that conversation, and that's really difficult.
It takes a lot of energy.
But it's what I signed up for, so...
That's brilliant. Really helpful advice for people looking to grow their businesses, to crack in local success stories. Jenny, as I said at the head of the show, you're speaking at a Brighton Chamber workshop on growing your business on 17th of November... I think you can book on the Chamber website, and if you want to see a Ruby Ruth doll in the flesh or in the cloth, they're available online and in some shops in Brighton, Jenny.
Yeah, at Pussy Home Boutique, and also having an open day on the 21st, so yeah, come along if you fancy having a look.
And Peter, Movem is easy to find online, movem.co.uk, right? And should be the first port of call for anyone getting involved in the rented sector. Best of luck with the Growing Business Awards as
well.
Thank
you.
And Sam, thank you so much for travelling up to Brighton for the show, inspiring our listeners with your words of wisdom.
You're welcome.
We really appreciate your involvement. And Sam's hosting a series of interviews with entrepreneurs on his own website, which are well worth a look. Visit sam-howell.co.uk for the Fish Tank Diaries.
The Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb.
You're listening to the Brighton Business Show, broadcasting on 97.2 FM, on digital, online and on podcast. I want to hear about the music that motivates you in your business life, so tweet your favourite tracks at Business Reverb or tell me about them on Facebook. Earlier, I asked Jenny from Ruby Ruth Dolls to pick a track, so here's Sound and Vision by David Bowie, which she says always makes her, and I think the dolls, happy. This is Natasha Steele with the Brighton Business Show, and next we have Going Up. Two business owners pitch to you, our Radio Reverb listeners. Will they inspire you to help them get to the next level? All will be revealed. So, in Going Up, we welcome two businesses onto the show each month and give them a minute to tell us what they do. It's based on the idea of an elevator pitch. Imagine finding yourself in the lift with someone important enough to help you move your business forward. You have the length of the ride to tell them all about it. How can you cram all that magic into just 60 seconds? Going up in the elevator today are Ted Davis and Brett Griffin. Welcome to the Reverb Studio.
Hi.
Thanks.
Brilliant you could come in, and I'm not going to say what it is you do because that's your job. You're about to step into the Business Show elevator where you'll hear the doors close and you'll have exactly a minute to pitch your business. When the minute's up, the doors will open. So are you ready, Brett?
Yes.
Off you go.
Over half the teachers in this country plan to leave the profession in the next 5 years. This due to stress because of an unmanageable workload. I'm Brett Griffin, the founder of Pupil Progress, and as a teacher of 10 years, I've designed a system that is saving teachers hours on a weekly basis. It will calculate the work in at grade exactly as the exam board would do, provide individual pupil reports and summary data for our senior leaders. All this so staff and teachers don't have to. With 157 schools using our system, we have generated £40,000 since April 2016. With the help of Entrepreneurial Spark, we have secured £150,000 of EIS funding. With schools spending on average £15,000 a year on educational software, we are trading in a £500 million market in the UK alone. My ask of you today is if you know anyone that works in the education sector, to tell them about www.pupil-progress.co.uk.
Fantastic. Kept the timing perfectly. How was it, Brett?
Yeah, it was intense.
Thanks very much. And are you ready for your pitch, Ted?
I think so, yep.
Your minute starts now.
My name is Ted Davis. I've worked as a freelance professional photographer for 8 years. I own and operate a photo studio in Brighton called Studio 323. I work closely with people to provide high-quality photo content to businesses, private individuals, by the way of corporate portraits, product photography, video content, blog imagery, and lifestyle product photography. I work with businesses right across Sussex to deliver high-quality images to support their marketing strategy, be it their product or themselves that they are promoting. I studied photography from a fine arts perspective, and I have also worked many years in the software industry as a marketing professional. So I have a unique experience that enables me to bring creativity into the mix to make images that communicate directly to an audience. My approach to making images in a business sense is always collaborative. I listen very carefully to what a customer is saying, how they want their images to look, and I work with them until that is achieved. If you're not happy with your images, then I'm not happy, and that's it.
Brilliant. Thanks ever so much, Ted. And some very interesting background there to your business. Now, I have to declare an interest here. Ted, we met earlier this week when I had a new headshot done at Studio 323 for my own business website and social media. The old one was about 10 years out of date and my hair colour had changed and the number of wrinkles had multiplied. How important is it for professionals to have good quality, up-to-date portraits done?
Well, I think it's extremely important, and just as you touched on a couple of interesting points, one of the most important things is that your images stay up to date. A lot of times we get a fantastic photo done at some point in our career, and we love that photo and it works, and then time goes on and we sort of keep that photo and people are still seeing that photograph, and then they meet us in person and we've changed all sorts of things. So it's very important to always be changing and updating your photos and images, and also get ones that are of good quality, something that is, you know, a photograph that has a good finish to it, really, I should say.
Mm-hmm. And what should we be thinking of when we go for a photograph in selecting the photographer or in terms of the look we want to achieve?
Well, when looking for a good, like for a photographer, when choosing a photographer, there's lots of them, especially in Brighton. There's a lot of freelance photographers and a lot of creative people here as well.
Absolutely.
So I think a good starting point is to sort of look for images that you like and then look to who has made those images. You look for a photographer that's close by, someone who's easily accessible, so you don't have to be traipsing across town just to make a shoot and then that sort of thing. So that's always helpful. It's very good to speak to them over the phone as well to get a sense of how you get along and how you feel with them, because what's most important when you're making a portrait is that you feel comfortable with them and that you can get on with it. I think if you get on with someone in any project that you're doing, then the outcome is going to be great. If you don't if there's something a bit funny you don't quite get on with their vibe or how they feel, then it's going to be a little awkward and the picture will look awkward.
Of course.
So there's lots of things. There's, and then thinking about the actual images, you can you want to plan your image with your photographer. So if it's a portrait, then you want to tell them who your audience is going to be, who's going to be looking at that photo. If it's product photography, it's the same sort of thing. You just want, you want to be able to plan that out ahead of time to see who, to talk to the photographer about who's actually going to be looking at the photos.
Can you give any examples of where this photography has played a big part in one of your clients' businesses?
Well, I just had a fantastic artisan, local artisan in Brighton named Eve Temmerman, who's just done some, she makes scented candles and Reiki scented candles and things. And you know, just the idea first of scented candles, you think, you know, you see them everywhere, you see them in markets, you see them all over the place. But then when I met her, we had really good connection and her product was really good. She puts a lot into her photos. So I felt that was important to get that same level of interest in her photos and work with her to get, you know, to show her products look as good as they were. So we talked for a long time. She gave me a good brief about what she does, about how she makes them, the whole the process that goes into making the candles. And as a result, we got some fantastic images that came out of it, but also built a relationship with her to sort of go on a journey of her product, of not just the candles themselves, but also her as well as the person who's making them, mm-hmm. the craftsperson.
Now, turning to you, Brett, can you expand a bit on how pupil progress works?
So the system designed for teachers. So as a teacher myself, I designed the system because there's this growing pressure on teachers to be able to report exactly where the pupils are working at. Mm. So we've designed systems that are specific to each exam board and for each qualification. For example, if I was a geography teacher, I was teaching GCSE and I was using AQA as the exam board, we've got a system that is designed specifically to calculate the working at grade exactly as AQA would do it for geography for that particular course, which is GCSE. There's a lot of pressure directed at teachers and the heads of faculty and the senior leaders to deliver on meeting educational targets. Mm. So the educational targets, you have to forecast. So in the summer, you'll get a set of results and you need to predict, you know, where your school is heading as to whether they're going to achieve those results. And our system helps with the accuracy of those predictions, as well as knowing what the whole school picture is as well.
Mm. So we hear a lot about teachers having to teach to the exam, and how does your technology play into that dialogue? Shouldn't teachers be left to teach without having to play to what examiners want in this granular way?
Well, the system we've designed actually supports you in deviating from teaching to the exam, because you actually really get that clear information of exactly where the pupils are working at. You actually provide the teacher more time to plan more effective lessons. Mm-hmm. A lot of the research that we've done is that teachers are spending more time on actually analysing the data than they are actually planning really creative lessons. Mm-hmm. So we take that stress away from them so they know where they're working at, and then they can actually put more time into creative lessons, more time in actually having some relaxation, being able to go home, see their family, have a glass of wine maybe.
There can't be many teachers who'd be against that.
I was going to say the same thing.
And it's as teachers, you know, having been a teacher myself for so long, is we're creative by nature. And when you have such a high workload that doesn't allow your creative time, you kind of stifle what you actually got into the profession for.
Absolutely.
So we're aiming to be able to free that and actually get creativity back into lessons and creativity back into education as well.
Brilliant. I mean, it sounds like your own teaching experience have played a big part in developing pupil progress. Mm. Can you tell us a bit more about that and about the journey you've had in terms of building the business, having previously been a teacher?
Yeah, the story is quite interesting. I essentially created a system to do exactly what I needed to do, which was to calculate the working at grade exactly as the exam board does it, so that I could report to my senior leaders, to the head teacher, so that I could meet and feed in with their whole school target of 70% A star to C. And this system that I created with my brother, actually, another school found out about it. They wanted to use it. I set them up for free. started to set up schools for free using the system, and they said, yeah, this is fantastic. They told other schools, and then it got to a point where I couldn't set them up anymore because I just didn't have enough time. Mm. So I said, look, I'm really sorry, I can't set you up anymore. And he said, that's fine, I'll pay you. So I said, okay. And then he said,
well, if there's money, we can do it.
Yeah, how much? So I said, well, it's £200. And he said, okay, no worries, I'll send you a check. So I literally had to Google what an invoice looked like and what it needed to include. And I received a check. So I effectively realised that there's more to this. Built the website with the web developers, and then the rest is history, because more and more people were able to subscribe, they were able to use the free trial, and then I realised the potential of the system when more and more teachers were passing it on to other subject heads. So for example, it was only launched for PE to start with, and then other heads of faculty such as geography and French and German, science, maths were all asking, where are you getting this software from? And that's when I decided to take the plunge and come out of education and start Pupil Progress as a business.
Mm, so you've just started a technology business completely from scratch.
Completely. Yeah, the exciting thing about it is I've actually learned more because I knew nothing. Mm. I'm so susceptible to anything that anyone has to say from the business sector and any industry that's had any success or failures. I just want to listen and learn. And I think my lack of experience has meant that it's moved forward massively, because everyone that has an idea or everyone that's got some experience, I've always been an open book. Mm. Whereas I think some of the people that I've been around over the whole course of this journey, some people that think they know how to run a business actually don't move forward that quickly, because even the ideas from people that run Photoshops, people that run canteens, cafeterias, any business, it's all one and the same thing, and you can take anything from anywhere and it can be applied to your concept.
Yeah, we were hearing about that earlier in the show. A business strategist, Sam Howell, was telling us that openness was a big part of being successful in business. Really interesting to hear you back up what he says with real life experience there. It's been brilliant having both of you on the show. Very different businesses, but really useful advice, both in terms of people using photography in their own business or starting a technology business from scratch. Even if you've come from a very different background, there's no reason not to take the plunge if you've got a really good idea. Thanks ever so much, Ted Davis and Brett Griffin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you'd like to enter the Business Show Elevator to pitch your company, drop me a line and we'll try to get you on the show. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at Business Reverb, or email natasha.steele@icloud.com. You've been listening to the Brighton Business Show with Natasha Steele. Thank you to my guests, Kathy Caden, Sam Howell, Jenny Mustill, Peter Ramsey, Ted Davis and Brett Griffin. Thank you also to Anthony Martin and Kelly Westlake for support here in the studio. The theme tune for the Business Show is Busy Earning by Jungle.